Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, the game on a Wednesday, and every Wednesday at this time, we say hello to our good friend John McClain down in Houston. John, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. I'm doing a lot better than I imagine the Titans are after blowing that 17-0 lead. I felt bad for their defense. Man, oh, man, did the defense play well. I paid close attention to it because the Bears are coming here for the Texans home opener on Sunday night, and boy, I thought the defense played great, but man, oh man, Will Levis, wow.
So what was your thoughts on that? On, I know everybody's going to focus on the interception and, you know, when he should have just taken the sack, and the flip six is kind of what we're referring it to here, but you know, he had the strip sack, the fumble that happened. He had some misses that he made. Just what was your overall view on Will Levis in game number one against Chicago?
Well, first of all, in my 48 years covering the NFL, I haven't seen many cases where you could judge a season after the first game. Now, maybe in Carolina and the Giants, and there was some bad football being played, but Levis has shown he has what it takes, and he's now full-time starter. He's got to make better decisions. You know, Brian Callahan and his coaches are talking to him about protecting the ball. He'll never make a boneheaded decision again like that when he's being sacked. And I thought it was very interesting when you were seeing the run back and Levis is on his knees and he's got his hands on his helmet like, oh no, what did I do? And that's a learning experience. It's a hard learning experience because you hope they learn when they win. And it was tough, but I think I would feel great about the defense. Tony Pollard, as is most cases, not all, but most, when you undergo torn ACL surgery, it's the second year where you are where you were before the surgery. And he looked good. I think he averaged on over 5 yards of carry. And that bodes very well. But the passing game, I noticed the only guy on the team who averaged even 9 yards, I mean, who averaged more than 8 yards a catch was Ridley. And 22 of that came on that last drive. So you can't have Spears averaging 2 yards a catch as your leading receiver. So that passing game needs a lot of improvement. And everybody knows it. Now they're going against the Jets. The Jets coming off an embarrassing loss. They've got a good defense. I'm guessing the Bears' defense is good since that's where it ended up last season. But Levis has got to play better, especially in clutch situations, and he's got to do it starting Sunday because they don't want to start 0-2 at home, of course.
John McClain is with us. So back to something you said about Levis of – you know, that he won't make a boneheaded play like that again. And I hope you're right. My concern is they've tried, going back to the last coaching staff, they've tried to tell him to get down and to slide and to quit taking these hits, and he simply will not listen. Like, he just – and I wonder if he's ever going to get that. And so that's my concern. Can he listen to the coaching? Can he take the coaching? Is he learning from these mistakes? Or – are there just some things that he's just going to keep doing, especially when he's under pressure and he panics?
See, that's a great point, panic. You know, he's listening to him. Of course he's listening when they tell him, and I'm sure he's nodding. He's not going, no, I'm not going to do that. But then when he gets in those pressure situations, it's like it went in one ear and out the other. And if he continues to do that, he's going to get benched because it's obvious it doesn't work. You know, sometimes it'll work when he runs for yards. Sometimes it'll work because he's got a great arm. He'll cut loose. But when he is in the grasp of people going down, I guarantee you, no matter how much he says, I was trying to dirt it. No, he was trying to throw a pass and shot put. And I'll guarantee you he's not going to do that anymore because he knows how much it hurt the team. He knows how much it hurt him. He knows how much it disappointed his coaches because that's the exact thing they tell him don't do. Just take the sack. You know, throw it away. Live for another play. Don't try to make the hero plays. You're not in that position yet. And that gunslinger mentality helped him get drafted in the high in the second round. But it's not going to work in the NFL if he doesn't show the improvement from the things the coaches are constantly harping on.
We're talking to our good friend John McClain on the Chase and Big Joe Show. All right, John, we turn our attention to this Sunday. The Jets come to town. They're 0-1. The Titans are 0-1. You know, one of the crazy stats in sports is when a team starts out 0-2, usually in the 16-game era, you know, you'd have like a 12% chance of making the playoffs. How vital is this game on Sunday to the Tennessee Titans?
Well, it's vital to both of them. Now, there have been teams that overcame 0-2 starts, but I think – talking about the playoffs and the Titans at this point, considering they were last in the division, is kind of premature. But the Texans started 0-2 last year and reached the divisional round of the playoffs, and it can be done. But the big reason was because C.J. Stroud, you know, not turning the ball over and making big plays. And that's something Levis, he doesn't have to make all the plays, but he just can't hurt the team. That's the key. You know, just don't hurt your team, especially when you have the lead. So Robert Saleh's seat has got to be the hottest in the NFL. You know, Aaron Rodgers has everything he wants. He's got his offensive coordinator, one of the worst we've ever seen. That's going to be the undoing. Saleh's probably going to get fired if they don't make the playoffs, and they are desperate. And the way the 49ers played, they ran the ball so well, and the Titans, if they ran the ball that much, you know, as it was, they had 140 yards, averaged 5.4 a carry, and Levis was part of that. But they got to come out with a game plan to run the ball, and the Jets know that's what they're going to try to do. And, of course, they're going to try to put pressure on Levis, see if they can get him to panic again. And their defense, I'm not going to say it's better than 49ers because the 49ers are good, but the Jets are supposed to have a good defense. They certainly have the talent. So, It is a pressure-packed game for both teams, but as I point out about the Texans, it's not impossible to go from 0-2 to making the playoffs.
What do you think Brian Callahan's message is to the team, not just Levis, John, this week, but overall message to the team as they do get ready for the Jets?
Forget about it. You know, that's the thing. Forget about it. They always tell them you celebrate or you sulk for the rest of the day, and then it's on to the Jets. Because you can't, you got to be like a cornerback. You get beat, you got to put it out of your mind, or you're going to get beat again. And they got a lot of new players. I'm not saying that happened, but when you have a lot of new players, new people doing anything, it's going to take a little time to incorporate them, especially when you didn't have a lot of time together in the preseason. I think a lot of the bad performances we've seen, especially with quarterbacks, veteran quarterbacks, is an offshoot of not playing in preseason. And this is almost for veteran starters. It's like their preseason. I know I thought that last year when the Texans, when they got beat at Baltimore and then came home and lost by 11 to Indy. And I thought, oh my God, I wish I hadn't picked them to win six games. I wish I'd picked them to win four. And then they go Jacksonville, win by 30 points. And I'm like, whoa. And I thought that was an aberration. And they came back and beat the pants off the Steelers. And then that's when I thought, well, this Stroud kid may have a chance to be special. And he was. So Levis has all the tools. You know, his problems between is above his shoulder pads. And he knows that. And the coaches know that. But if he doesn't make the kind of improvement mentally and do what the coaches want him to do, they'll be one of the many teams in the quarterback market after the season.
We're talking to John McClain down in Houston. HoustonTexans.com is where you can find his work. We'll have more with John coming up next here on Chasing Big Joe, presented by the Omni Nashville Hotel, 1025, 1063. Chasing Big Joe, 1025, 1063, the game. Perfect song to bring us back in. John McClain is with us from Houston. HoustonTexans.com. It's where you can find his work. 23 years ago today, John, our country changed forever. What do you remember about the discussions after the tragic events of 9/11 leading to the cancellation of games that weekend and ultimately the rest of the season and what all transpired? But what do you remember about everything that happened in the days following?
Well, I remember that morning my wife on her way to work woke me and turned on the TV in the bedroom and said, "Watch this." And I opened my eyes and I see one of the towers burning. And I said, what is this? She said, I don't know, but it's on every network. And so, of course, I was mesmerized like everybody else was. And then I wanted to know how it would affect, you know, the NFL, because that's what I covered. And at the time, the Texans hadn't started playing. They wouldn't do that to the next year. So I was traveling all over the country, including making a lot of trips to Nashville, covering the NFL. And I had an upcoming one like the follow, not the weekend after, the next weekend. And I always stayed downtown in Manhattan at the big Marriott at Times Square. And when I went, there was nobody at Times Square. I was just amazed. Everybody was inside, even at time later, and it was always packed there. And then there was this constant undercurrent of what was going to happen. And I remember Michael Strahan, who's from Houston, and Michael Barrow, who was the Oilers' second-round pick in 1993, would sign with the Giants. They rode to work every day at Giants Stadium. And one of them, or they let a video guy go with them, who was in the car, but it was the way their route they took after Strahan picked up Barrow. And I guess they were on the New Jersey Turnpike going to Giants Stadium where they practice. You know, they pointed toward Manhattan, and the remnants of the ashes and the smoke was still sky high. It just blew me away. But when I covered that first game, I can't remember if it was the Jets or the Giants, because both played there, of course. But I remember, man, it was quiet in the press box. Wasn't the usual constant noise, chatter that you hear, because it affected so many people. And since then, I have met so many people who left their jobs and good jobs and joined up because they wanted to fight terrorism, including a friend of mine who did 4 tours as a medic and has told some unbelievable stories about the war, and that patriotism still just blows me away.
John, I'm like you. I love the history of the National Football League, and I go back to this with Pete Rozelle when JFK was assassinated, how they played the games that following Sunday, and Pete Rozelle called that, you know, his most just gut-wrenching decision he ever made. And you look back, all that happened there, and the players thanked him for not canceling the games because they needed to get some normalcy back in there. So when you look at this, John, have you noticed that in times of things like this, we always look to football in a way to either make us feel better or to grasp onto it, or am I just missing this completely?
Well, first of all, both those tragedies happened during football season. Now, if they'd happened in, say, May or June or April, then it would have been up to baseball to see what they would do. And so I think sports is a common bond that unites people, and there's always going to be a faction that's critical of sports, a lot of them because they don't like sports to begin with, who are going to be critical if the games must go on. But I think it has a unifying effect on the public because they can talk about something else. And then in those games, of course, do tributes. And, you know, and they go, boy, some of the things that went on in NFL stadiums after 9/11 were absolutely incredible, the tributes that they paid. So I think, yes, it was good that the games went on.
Thank you for that. I knew you would know exactly what we're talking about. My last question for you, after week one reaction, can you identify the best team in the National Football League?
Well, there's two things I know right now after watching the first weekend of the NFL and second weekend of college football. The Cowboys are going to win the Super Bowl, and the University of Texas is going to win the national championship. Without a doubt, there's no reason to play any more games because their fans down here, as I tweeted during the Longhorns' victory in Michigan, their fans are going to be insufferable, and they are. And Cowboy fans are always insufferable during the regular season. They keep their mouth shut in the playoffs. And I love to see all those Cowboy fans in Houston get their hopes up and then just get crushed in the playoffs. But there were some teams like San Francisco and Dallas that looked great. There were some teams that just looked horrendous, like Carolina and the Giants. And then a team, the biggest surprise to me, and it shouldn't have been because the Bengals always start slow under Zach Taylor. Mm-hmm. Joe Burrow has a terrible record in the first two games of the season, but they let New England beat them. That one was terrible. Now, I'm not surprised Dallas won the Cleveland game in Cleveland. I'm surprised they beat them up that bad. And then Deshaun Watson was booed off the field for another terrible performance. Then he gets hit by another lawsuit in Houston, not just from somebody that gave him a massage, but somebody she claims she was supposed to go on a date with him, and he sexually assaulted her in her apartment. So now everybody's looking to see how could the Browns use this as a violation of his contract to get out of paying him the $92 million they still have left to pay him. Now, that's not going to happen because he's going to say that never happened. And if they tried it, they'd get sued to kingdom come, and that would take years. But Deshaun Watson is not the quarterback he was here in 2020. Titans fans know it. They saw him from 17, and when he had an incredible debut against them, through 2020. It looks like he doesn't want to play. A longtime member of the Cleveland media told me he looks like he's just forgotten how to play.
John, great stuff as always. We love these conversations with you, and enjoy week two. We'll talk next week.
Jason, Big Joe, thank you guys very much. Good luck to the Titans against the Jets. I'd love it if the Jets start 0-2.
Thank you. For sure. John McClain, find his work, HoustonTexans.com, and he joins us every Wednesday at 9:30. Coming up next, another Wednesday tradition, Derek Mason. Yes. No, not our Derek Mason. Coach Derek Mason from MTSU. Talk to him next here on Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.